one of three possibilities. The first one is the most difficult one, just dropping it. The second one is substitution with the opposite, that's what the Buddha calls it. And the third one is to think of some totally unrelated subject which is pleasing to the mind. Now the same applies, of course, to the other hindrances. When there's ill will, the substitution with the opposite would be loving kindness and compassion. Not easy to do, when we are just getting angry at somebody, and the mind actually remembers that this is not a very good thing to do, and then to be love that person, have compassion for that person, may not be possible. Compassion is usually a bit easier. So it may be necessary to again do that intermittent step. When we have the third one, the sloth and torpor, laziness and drowsiness, the most important thing is our own willpower. And I will talk about willpower at another time, because it's one of the seven factors of enlightenment. Without willpower, there is no path. There is an occasional remembrance of the path and an occasional drawing near to it, because one has agreed that it's a good thing. But willpower is that which makes us overcome our natural gravitational resistances. And without willpower, it won't work. So that's the opposite for that. And again, if we find ourselves in the throes of sloth and torpor and can't drop it, and there isn't enough willpower, get to something else and try again. Like when the mind is saying, for instance, I don't want to meditate, it's too hot, it's too early, it's too late, I can't be bothered, my knees hurt, or whatever. Think of something very nice that happened in meditation at one stage or another, and then try again. And the fourth one, the worry and restlessness. Of course, the restlessness is due to the fact that we haven't found what we really want, namely inner peace and inner joy. And the worry is about putting the mind in the wrong place. So it takes a fair bit of doing to be able to drop either one of those. And if we aren't skilled at that yet, and it does take time to become skilled at that, the opposite of worry and the substitute for that would be the remembrance and the understanding of impermanence. What's there to worry about? That what I'm worrying about this moment isn't going to happen in another moment in this way. There aren't two like moments. And the person that's worrying is not the one who's going to actually experience it either. We are never the same two moments in a row. If you think instead of worry of impermanence, you've got a good substitution. And restlessness, the same, also impermanent. And the one with the doubt, well, obviously the opposite of that is confidence. Well, now confidence does arise when one has done any of these things, when one has substituted. Confidence arises to a great extent in the second meditative absorption, but if one hasn't got there yet, then one needs to use these substitutions to gain confidence in one's own mental ability. Mental ability means that the mind is capable of doing what we want it to do, and we don't allow it to run away with us. and just do whatever comes into the mind. I mean, usually we allow that. We just allow it to do whatever comes into the mind. And a lot of very unwieldy and unpleasant things happen because of that in the world. Because people believe what they're thinking and just go ahead and do it. And life doesn't have a feel of security and safety and solidity and being. It's always sort of on the edge, teetering on the edge, sort of. We're not feeling at ease because of the fact that there's no confidence. Confidence, first of all, in our own ability. Confidence that we have found the most wonderful path which will actually be able to eliminate all dukkha and are following the highest ideal. That kind of confidence can give one a great deal of feeling of solidity. The Buddha said, the Dhamma protects the Dhamma practitioner. We're protected by knowing that the Dhamma is that which has our priority. And whenever we have any kind of a doubt that comes in, oh, maybe I should do something else, and there are so many things offered, maybe I should try them. A lifetime isn't long enough, by the way, to try them all. There's too much of stuff going on. And any time we feel that we may not be able to live up to what the Buddha taught, all we need to do is go within and find within us that feeling of lovingness and the feeling of being actually present. Everybody's got it. If we find those feelings, lovingness and being present, we neither worry nor do we have insidious doubt about anything. We know we're here. It's actually all we need to know. If we didn't have all these other ideas, it'd all be very simple. We're here for a limited time, and that's it. Also, when doubt or restlessness arise, it's very often due to the fact that we think we've got to prove something. Investigate. Who do you have to prove anything to, and what do you have to prove? We're here. We don't have to prove anything. That's enough proof that we're there. We can be seen and touched and heard sometimes. Oh, that's enough. Now, the substitution with the opposite is that what belongs to four of the 37 factors of enlightenment, the four great efforts, Pali the Patanas. And the formula, I'll just say the traditional formula, not to let an unwholesome thought arise which has not yet arisen, not to let an unwholesome thought continue which has already arisen, to make a wholesome thought arise which has not yet arisen, to make a wholesome thought continue which has already arisen. And that means nothing else other than what I've just explained. If we can be without the hindrances, that'd be better. If they have already arisen, don't continue with them. As quickly as possible, change them. If there is the wholesomeness then that you have changed to, keep it going. Now this is for daily living. And I repeat, without that, there's no spiritual path. if we don't do something about those hindrances, spirituality is something in books, what other people do, what we're hoping for, that we're projecting. Unless we do it, there's nothing we can really substitute for this doing. If we do it, then we're practicing. Now, obviously, people forget. I've had daily confrontations and they forget what happened. Like somebody takes the last parking spot and they get angry about it, you know, type of thing. But because there is time, you don't have to get out of the car and start yelling right away. So there's time to consider this. The more often we remember that all we're doing with this anger is making bad karma for ourselves, the easier it will be to drop it, to substitute it, to let go of it, or to use a temporary measure of going somewhere with the mind. Now, this is an important aspect of this mind content mindfulness. Now, the mindfulness on mind content concerns many other things, not just what I've talked about. But these are the negative aspects with which we all have to deal. And they all make bad karma. And this is something which is important to remember and to know. Because I like to make, to do a contemplation on karma. We need to remember that every thought we have makes karma. The mind is the one that triggers it all. So if we have a thought of any of those five hindrances, we are making bad karma. Making bad karma can only bring bad results. And what's the first bad result that it brings? Unhappiness. Who is happy when they're worrying or restless? When they're doubting and not decisive? When they're angry? When they're craving? When they're slothful? Nobody's happy that way. So that's the first resultant which comes immediately. We don't have to think that karma is something that happens last life or next life. It happens immediately. If we are angry at somebody, we're immediately unhappy. We're immediately ill at ease. There's no way we have to wait for another life for that. That'd be kind of silly, wouldn't it? And yet it's often misunderstood. Literally translated, the word karma means action. But the Buddha said, no, it's not action. It's intention. Karma, O monks, I declare, is intention. So it's what we have intentionally in the mind. Now, very often, yes, primarily people think that this is just happening in their mind. It's not just happening. It's an untrained mind that they're not able to change and substitute with something else. So if we have any of those hindrances in our mind, the resultant is immediate. Now, that the resultant may also have other repercussions is clear. For instance, if we get angry, the next step may be that we say something, which doesn't sound so good. We may try to use proper language, because we're still fairly in command of ourselves, but the feeling behind the words is definitely angry. So, what happens? What we say is heard by the one we talk to, and that person, not having practiced very long either, also gets angry. So we've got two angry people. The Buddha compared anger to picking up hot coals with one's bare hands and trying to throw them at somebody else. Now, it's quite possible that the other person has practiced and knows when to duck. And then we are left with the burns in our hand, because the one who picks up these hot coals is the one that burns first. It's more likely that the other person hasn't practiced either long enough, and so that the hot coals actually find their target. Well, what did we do then? Now, meanwhile, we haven't only thought negatively and made bad karma that way, we've also made bad karma through speech, which is a little more, little heavier karma, speech. And then it may actually come into some action. We may actually do something which is detrimental to the well-being of another person. And that's the heaviest karma. But it all starts in the mind. We don't have to go to speech. We don't have to go to action. All we need to know is, what are we thinking? And if that thinking is unwholesome, we must remember we're making bad karma. And bad karma, the resultants always come back to us, never to somebody else. See, now, if we make somebody else angry, that is their karma. We are the trigger, which is bad karma for us. But if they get angry, also, they're making bad karma. So this happens practically all the time, because nobody has practiced enough to see and to recognize the fact that we have to watch our own karma. If we don't watch our own karma and be careful with it every day from morning to night, the resultants in our daily living will not be very favorable. If we haven't been generous enough, we will be lacking support. If we haven't been kind enough, we'll be lacking kindness, which we're looking for, and all the rest of it. So it is also helpful, although we cannot find the cause and the effect exactly, and it's useless to look for that. We can still investigate what is most lacking in our daily life. What do we actually really feel as a lack? And then see whether, because it's usually something we want to get, whether we ourselves can provide it. Now, if we're lacking love, we have to provide love. If we're lacking generosity from others, we have to provide generosity. It's so simple. And the whole world, unless they've heard the Buddha's teaching, knows nothing about it. It's so utterly simple and works without fail. And yet, it always comes as a surprise. Naturally, it comes as a surprise, because it goes 180 degrees against hate and greed. It's just the opposite. So any of the things that we feel we're not having, that's what we need to bring up ourselves, and immediately it will be there. Now, all you need is, for instance, the example of love. If you feel, for instance, as an example, that there isn't enough love in your life, nobody there who loves you really, well, you bring up love in your own heart, and what have you got? Love. so simple. You don't have to look for anybody to love you. You've got it. You've got it in your own heart. Naturally, it has to be the kind of love which is impersonal, as a quality of the heart, because you can't run around trying to find somebody who's lovable. It's just the quality of the heart. But once you put it in, the quality of the heart is there in yourself, then you never lack it. It's there. It doesn't matter who else is there, or whether that person who is there is loving you enough or not, or loving you at all or not, or nobody's there to love, or that person is not so lovable, which is usually the problem, isn't it? It's got nothing to do with anything. You have love in the heart and you give it out and that's it. Got it. And the same applies to everything else. Everything else that you might be lacking, that's what you have to bring up yourself. Making karma is one of the very important aspects of daily living. Now, obviously, meditating is making good karma, because the intention is a pure one. Listening to Dhamma is making good karma. But what we have in the mind, that's the basis for our karma. That's the most important thing. And karma, the making of karma, obviously also is something that goes from life to life, but we don't need to be concerned with that. So what happened in last life? Well, does it really matter? You're stuck with it, whatever it was. You're here and you're stuck with it. Can you undo it? No. Do you even know about it? No. Why should we even think about it? Okay, now what's going to happen next life? Do we know? No, we don't. For anything that really touches us now? No. So the only thing that matters is making good karma today. And then whenever today happens, now is today, and then there comes another day which is called today, and another day is called today, that's all that matters. Making good karma today. And that happens in the mind. Obviously, it then translates into speech and action. But if it hasn't happened in the mind first, it can't translate. Can't translate into anything that we say, nor into any action. We also have to watch our intention. As long as we have the me illusion, that me illusion will be embedded in our intention. It's all right, there's nothing we can do about it. It's okay. Let it be there. You can't take it out anyway. You've got to first become enlightened, then you can take it out. So it's there, that's fine. What we need to watch is that we don't kid ourselves. That we don't think we want to do something good, and actually the intention behind it is to be important. It can be both. Well, that's mitigating circumstances. At least both is there. But it can also be only the one. And if it's only the one, desist. Don't do it. It doesn't bring anything. I think that story I told you, where this woman took me into the house, which was obviously a charitable act, and did save my life, but because she had the wrong intention, she didn't get what she wanted. She didn't get a household help. All she got was another creature there that needed attention. So I think that's a typical example of an outward good act which had the wrong intention behind it, a selfish intention. So it's... but, again, in her case, both happened. The good and the bad karma, both happened. And we often have that too. It's all right. But if it's only wanting to be important or proving something to somebody, then don't. Because then the bad karma is overshadowing the good. But if it's both, if we're making good and bad karma, we're going to get both results. Good and bad results. They don't sort of dissolve into each other. It's not like a credit and debit balance in the bank. You owe some money, you put the money in, and then it's zero. It's not like that. You get both. You get the debit and the credit. And very often the question which arises in that connection is killing an animal that is suffering because one doesn't like it to suffer. It's killing, and one doesn't want the animal to suffer. So it's making both karmas, good and bad. Bad karma for killing, good karma for don't want the animal to suffer. That's just the way it is. What we need to do is watch the mind. And then, as the mind, through the meditation, becomes calmer and clearer, we also see much clearer about our karma making. And we can be far more careful. The way the words come out is grounded in the way the person feels and the way the person thinks. You can use exactly the same words and make them come out totally different. Sometimes you can even see that on TV. Politics, dreadful business on TV, and they're saying the same things. They're all saying the same things, but it comes out differently. It depends on who's saying it. And the same with us. We may be saying the same thing, but it comes out differently. So we have to watch what goes on within. Once we have been watching for some years and substituting for some years and have seen the veracity of all this what the Buddha teaches, there's very little danger that we may continue with the negativity. It just doesn't arise. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't matter what happens out there. I already gave you the example of that, the games that little children play. We play with them, but we don't take them seriously. They're just games. The main thing is inner peace, inner happiness, security, solidity, a feeling of being grounded within oneself, centered, knowing what the center is, not me, not mine. But first of all, before we get any further, the unity with everything, not this separation. Now obviously the unity is not the end of the line, but for the moment it should suffice. We're going to do a contemplation. Before we do, we like to stand up and stretch your legs. And please put the attention on the breath for just a few moments. I'd like you to think of the karma you have made today and yesterday and maybe the day before with your thoughts. Try to recall, what kind of karma did I make with my thoughts? And was I aware that I was making karma? And the third question, when they were negative, did I try to change them? Now, any thought that you can remember today, yesterday, or the days before, can you see and recognize the result of it within yourself? For the negative thought, the result of anxiety, dislike. For the positive thought, the result of ease and well-being. Can you see that and recognize it? Even if you can remember just one or two thoughts. Now, can you go back in your mind to the past in this life and recognize any important decisions or important happenings where you had to make a definite decision? And remembering and knowing that decision, can you see the resultant? Thank you. Can you see the support system that your good intentions are providing for your life? Look at your good intentions, the ones you know about, and see whether you recognize that they are a support system. And now have a look inside of yourself and see whether you can find anyone or all of the five hindrances and their manifestations. Just take a look how they manifest. Then have a look to see whether you can see the resultant. Have a look to see whether you can remember in daily living that giving in to any of the five hindrances means making bad karma. That you can actually impress the mind with that. And now investigate whether you have already tried to substitute any of the hindrances with their opposites. Wanting to have with giving, ill will with loving, sloth and torpor with willpower, worry and restlessness with impermanence, and doubt with confidence. Have a look and see whether you've already done that at times. Whether you found it easy or difficult. Whether you can continue to do it. Just take a look. And now take a look what your priorities are as far as your intentions go in this lifetime. What's most important? Today is the first day of the rest of our lives. What are my intentions? Then can you investigate what would be the best way of making my intentions really happen? Have another look to see how close have I been living to these intentions which I'm now aware of. How much change do I need to make them priorities? your mental formations, your thoughts, arising and ceasing, and make a determination to make good karma with them.